Steam locomotives were some of the most powerful machines ever built. They pulled trains that fueled our imagination. They represented vision, collaboration, ingenuity, customer service, and extraordinary human achievement. But in order to get to their destination, it took someone guiding them through a series of switches in order to get to the main line. Just like leaders today, it takes someone directing them down the right path in order to get to their destination. Welcome to Mainline Executive Coaching ACT, which stands for and Cultural Transformation, hosted by Master Certified Intelligent Leadership Executive Coaches Michael Bailey and Rich Barron. With over 50 years of successful cultural transformation and quantum leadership development between them. Once again, thanks for joining us and enjoy today's show.
Welcome. Join us. We're going. This is Mainline Executive Coaching. We're rolling down the track. Mainline Executive Coaching, ACT, Act, Action, also and Cultural Transformation. We're going to be talking about a very interesting dynamic that's going on right now in offices across the world, not just here locally, but also across the world. It is the big debate to return or not to return to the office.
Yes.
That's what we're going to be talking about today. This is a passion that Rich has. Rich Barron, my partner. I'm Michael Bailey. We're here on this ride for you and with you today. And we're going to be talking about returning to the office or not return. What are the pros, the cons? How does it work? How do you navigate this? It actually falls really into the finally the bailiwick, if you think about it, of how to be a great leader, the ability to be adaptable, to be able to pivot, to be able to move and adjust, be agile. It really comes down to that in many, many ways. Absolutely. If you don't have those abilities, you probably will be making some painful and maybe even very expensive kinds of decisions that will be costly to you. But if, on the other hand, if you're good at that stuff, it will be a lot easier. So let's start there. Return or not to return to the office, Rich?
I find this a very interesting article because it really, there's definitely a line in the sand if you look at business. And that line is pretty much the pandemic. Before the pandemic and post-pandemic, how business was done before, how business is done now. Even though there was a lot of starting to go virtual and working from home and a few things before the pandemic, it really pushed it to that next level, to that need for the ability to work virtually, the ability to develop teams and culture virtually versus what it was before. And now we're seeing a shift, kind of that shift more and more going back to the office. And it's not just about people going back to the office. It's also about more foot traffic going back into businesses.
That's a big part of it, I think. I agree with you. A lot of, and I mean a lot, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of small businesses were crushed during that period of the COVID. They just shut them down to let the big box businesses stay open. That was somehow cool. We never could understand that, but the small ones, they really became very, you know, coming down on them. So the idea of shopping from home, like Amazon, Amazon did tremendously during the shutdown period. They made them billions and billions of dollars. So now getting back out, getting back in the air and sunshine and going to stores and seeing the local places that you have, local shops, it's kind of fun to go out there and do that. So there is this interesting alternative. It was almost like, I remember, do you remember being the shutdown? It was like an alternative universe.
It was
so weird.
I remember one time, Michael, going up to the dump to take a load of yard stuff up to the landfill and pulling in the landfill, and we were stopped. We were stopped at the gate by a sheriff's deputy who said, you know, you shouldn't be even out traveling right now. You should be home. You should not be, you know, and even threatened with if we see you again out here, you can get ticketed for this. And I'm thinking, what's happened to us? This is a strange new world we're in. And I know there was a lot of fear around it right at first and a lot of, knee-jerk reaction right at first. But I found that real very weird. It's like, I don't think I'm going to get COVID if I go dump a bunch of stuff at the landfill. But apparently others thought differently.
Yeah, people were ticketed. People were arrested for walking alone.
Yeah.
On the beach.
Yeah. Yep. I even remember here, you couldn't travel from county to county for a while. Do you remember some of that?
Yeah.
That stuff going on, it's like, who, you know, who's going to know? But apparently someone figured that was the safe way to be.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because that shutdown, there was two things that went on. One, there was a shutdown. And then on the other hand, it kind of released the bird out of the cage.
Yes, it did.
So now we got this freedom working from home, not having to get on the freeways and travel 20, 30, 40, some people. 90 minutes just to go to work. I know that's true in LA. I don't know about back east, but that's true back out in the LA area. Long time. And so there was this kind of thing. Isn't it nice to be able to be at home and work, still be able to telecommute, Zoom, Teams, on and on and on. That was pretty cool. And be able to still do get the work done that you can get done. Now, what we were talking about beforehand, there are some industries you cannot just telecommute. You've got to be there. You ran businesses where you right. had to be there. Was no like, you can't phone it in, you can't Zoom it in. So let's talk about that. Let's go from there. That's kind of a bottom line. There are some places you must be in the location.
I think there's, I would say like sanitation workers need to be there. Police officers need to be there. Healthcare workers have to be. You can't work virtually, even though that you now can go to maybe a virtual doctor's visit, but it's really not the same way. You know, they're not going to check your blood pressure or whatever. But there are some industries that have to be there, have to be on site. You can't not, you know, be in person at some of these places. But then again, there are other types of industries, even say the financial industry or some of these others that really or even data programming and data analysis or you know, there's dozens of others that are really suited for this work from home.
Right. And so and the other part of it is it's the one article I was reading, it says, you know, pretty much follow the money. The money is going to determine what really works and what doesn't work. And one of the yes. things that they talked about there is because people are working from home, a lot of these big office buildings where people used to congregate to meet, those offices have been emptied for a while. Now they're starting to come back. But it saved a huge amount of rent, huge amount of lease for these companies that they weren't having to rent as much or lease as much space. That's a huge overhead. So there's
yes,
that aspect of it.
But we still see all these new office buildings being built. But the sad thing is how many of them are vacant?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
There's that whole I-15 for where we live in Utah. I-15 is this corridor that we have that along that corridor of I-15, they were doing both sides of the freeway. They were coming up with business, you know, buildings, you know, yeah. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 stories high easily. They even had yeah. whole parks where there was like 6 or 7 or 8 of these large buildings that housed how many people in their offices. I mean, they were doing that big time. Then COVID hit and a lot of them, they're just vacant.
Vacant, yes. Space for rent. You see that all over the place.
Yeah, that's what we did. So what's the deal here? How do we, as leaders of an organization, and it seems to stall out, is between 20, depending on what part of the country you're in, between 20 and 30%, you know, aren't coming back at this point anyway. How do you start navigating that? How do you start making the determination? Are we going to go back to the office? Are we not going to go back? Or what percentage of us are? Or who is going to go back and who has that option? And maybe it's, you know, maybe the beginning of the week you come in or end of the week you come in. You can stay home in the middle. How do you do those kinds of things, man? That's masterful.
It is. It really just kind of come down to that hybrid work model. And it really around the middle of the week is where you see more foot traffic into these offices. Not only employees going back, but you see maybe customers coming more into the middle parts of the week. One thing that it's shown that I found that was very interesting is Fridays, offices are vacant. People are at home, or they're capitalizing on additional PTO or whatever. But it's really that mid part of the week that we see a lot of this foot traffic, people coming back. I read an interesting thing about this. And I was talking to you about this a little bit more, Michael, before this. Generationally, how are the different generations working through this? Boomers, for example, and maybe the early Gen Xers, that wasn't an option. You had to get up. You went through the whole process of getting ready to work. You got in your car, you went down to the train station, you went to the office, and that's where you spent your life. It worked. There was really no working from home, no matter what you did. You were in the office, marketing, whatever it is. There's some things I believe that those generations are better at. Things like maybe time management, conflict resolution. I think being in the workplace really has developed that extra need for that one-on-one conflict resolution. But now you look at some of these different generations, millennials, Gen Z, they're so adept at this virtual world. They can work through this virtual world. I think there are some skills that the boomers and the early Gen Xers don't have in terms of working virtually or working from home. To them, it just doesn't compute. We need to be in an office. We need to be around people forever. That's how they were, even school, going education-wise. There was no online stuff. It was all in person, on ground, classes. I remember going to school and having a math class with, I don't remember how many people were in this math class, but it was huge. It was huge. Professor down there, the board, everybody was in there, had their books, whatnot. Nowadays, that's all, you can do that online. And you never get to see the other person other than a 2D image. So, I don't know what's driving this going back to work, whether it's the need to be around people, whether it's maybe some of the older generations kind of still pushing this, we need to be in the office, or what is that? I mean, you maybe take it from here, Michael. What do you think?
I think here's the difference. And unless you've been there, you would not recognize it. I think growing up in the 50s and 60s and even into the 70s, there was a sense of community about going to school. You went to school. You didn't see those kind of shootings and strange things going on in schools that started popping up later on, right? And so the sense of community was something that was natural to us, congregating, coming together to do things, whether it was school, or going to work, that kind of a thing. And of course, our parents, my parents especially, and yours somewhat, it was that sense of community going through the tough times, the depression, working together as a community. You go out at night and you walk around the blocks. Nobody had TVs back then. They had the radios on. The radios were turned up. So you could literally walk from one house to the next house and still pick up Jack Benny, or whatever, because everybody was listening to the same radio station, that kind of stuff. So there's a sense of community. And I think that sense of community started breaking down, somewhat in the 70s, certainly in the 80s and 90s, and it really started getting worse and worse and worse. So people stopped feeling safe in communities. I think that's a big idea. We felt safe in communities. Now people do not feel safe in communities. There's a lot of segmenting going on. There's a lot of different groups. There's this group and that group and that group and so on. And those groups, it's just easy to get into contention. It's easy to get into conflict. So you're saying, here's what I hear you saying, in a community where there's just this kind of sense of we're in the same community, that sense of community makes it easier to resolve conflicts because we're all safe. We're all invested in the community. We want our community to be safe. We want our community to be healthy. We want to help other people. Where communities are now starting to segment off into different groups, that's hard to communicate that sense of belonging and safety. So therefore, it's easier to get anxious about conflict and how even to resolve conflict in a satisfactory way without causing more conflict, because that's what you see these days. In the attempt to solve conflict, there's more conflict, you know? I mean, I remember the first riot was down in Watts, long, long time ago. And we'd seen nothing like that ever before, the Watts riot. And it went on for several days. And that was the kind of beginning of this breaking apart of communities. And so I think you cannot get away from the fact of how we see communities. Do we see communities as safe, or do we see them as threatening? Do we see them as a way to, you know, bring us together, to work together, to help us be productive and whole? Or do we see communities as being compulsive, compelling, forcing, and contentious? So I think that's one of the things that we're dealing with right now. How do you get rid of that stuff over here and find a way to bring in different groups? And I know there's a lot of talk about that, but it doesn't seem to be very effective. And I think that great leaders must put together great organizations that can create that sense of bringing people together in healthy ways.
Yes.
Productive ways. And I'm saying healthy first, productive second, so that they really can be a high-functioning organization. That calls for a great deal of high-level leadership skills. And that's one of the problems that we ongoingly address, is that it seems that the very time that it is most necessary to have great leadership of character and abilities, and you can't have one or the other, you got to have them both. It's because if you have great character, but you don't have great abilities, well, then you got somebody who means well, but is ineffective. On the other hand, if you don't have an organization or a leader that has great character, right, but a lot of abilities, often they go to pragmatism, and it's kind of like, well, do whatever it is they have to do to get the objectives met. There's no ethics. There's no morality. Just get the result. So you've got this contention here that's going on. Do we have high character, or do we have high abilities? And the answer is you need both. You must have high character and of great abilities.
Yeah.
And again, that is tough to put together.
And I think we're still learning. We're still learning. I mean, really, we're only about 4 years into this model, this new business model. And it's going to take a lot of looking and understanding and generational knowledge, if you will, to put this together. It's not one way or the other, but it's like you said, it's got to be a whole collective integrity, character, understanding, acceptance. You know, we can go on and on, because this new business model really requires some of the old way of thinking, where we protected the community, right? We were part of the community. Everybody understood that we needed to be part of something bigger, and we craved that human function. Versus now, where I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's still a lot of fear and anxiety about what's going on in the world, but we still have to work. We still have to function. We still have to have these organizations with this great culture and ability to be successful. So this is, like you said, this is going to take some very special leaders, not just your basic. And I don't mean basic by any means, but I'm just saying the individual contributor on the job is not the guy that's going to be cut out for this. The guy or the gal cut out for this, just not.
Now, you must have a much bigger vision of what's going on and what it is that you bring to the work. It can't be solely about the numbers, and yet you cannot exclude the numbers. Somehow you've got to be bringing the people in, the people working with the numbers, working in conjunction with the numbers. Somehow it's got to be this combination of people and numbers and statistics and processes, and yet at the same time, bringing that in such a way that people feel like they belong, that they matter, that they make a difference. People are not numbers. That's the thing that we want to remember. There was the Nazis put the numbers on the people in a way to dehumanize the human being. You're not a person. You're a number. We cannot allow that. People are predominant over numbers. People are the ones that make the numbers work. You can't make the numbers make the people work, because that's the dehumanization of human beings. And that's the worst place we could possibly go.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So if they want to get a hold of us and find out how we can help them as individual leaders grow, and also as their cultures take on new things, what do they do?
Well, they go to michaelbailey.com, first and foremost, michaelbailey.com, or richbarronexecutivecoaching.com. And we would love to help you. We would love to help you and your organization find that talent pool and teach you how to find that talent pool for these great leaders going forward. It's not something you should do. It's a must. It is an absolute must in order to continue down this path of this hybrid work model and making it work. There's more to it than just the individual contributor. And it's going to take a lot of effort on your part to do that. And we're here to help.
Absolutely. Well said. And it is a must-do. The other side of the coin of must-do is, golly gee, you get to do it. How exciting.
Yes. And that's something else to look forward to.
That's right.
Other than just thank God it's Friday.
And I take Friday off anyway, so what do I care?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So shout outs. I got one for today. Oslo, Norway.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, Oslo, Norway. West Valley City, Utah.
Yes, we've got now 60 listeners in 66 countries. And it's like 658 cities.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Like that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So there's some pretty cool stuff going on. We appreciate so much all you folks around the world. I'm just taking a look. Is there anything else I can see here? I don't know if you mentioned North Bend, Washington before, but they're
no, I don't think we have mentioned North Bend, Washington. So
that's good. So thank you all. We love you all. Keep listening. Yep. Spread the word. And just go out there.
Yeah, let's go out there and get it done, right? Let's get this done.
That's absolutely right.
All righty. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Leaders, lead well, doggone it. Lead well.
With all of the issues facing leaders and organizations today, you need executive coaching more than ever. Go to our websites, richbarronexecutivecoaching.com or michaelbailey.com. You can also find us both on LinkedIn. Reach out to us and let's sit down and find out just how bright your future can be with executive coaching. We'd also like to thank all of our supporters in over 60 countries and 600 cities worldwide who have helped to make us one of the top executive coaching podcasts in the world. From Rich Barron and Michael Bailey, this is Mainline Executive Coaching ACT. Thank you and take care.